because you people found some free protein bars in the break room, and you've all got nutty.
We've got hot. There's nuts in it. That's why.
Twin Cities News Talk. Justice and Drew. Hey, at least she took care of my burning ring of fire from earlier this morning, along with Sam.
Oh, don't remind me.
Well, I fell into one once.
You know? Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. I won't do it again.
That's going to be the next bumper.
For crying out loud. All right, Star Tribune. This is the last from the Star Tribune. Actually, this might be the last one from the Star Tribune today. Has an article. Met Council's equity push. Hard to see on the ground. Agency's effort to spread out services only causes ripple. I didn't know this was
their
job.
The Met Council set out with an agenda and fell woefully short?
Yeah.
That never happens.
Every 2 years, dozens of transportation projects compete for a slice of the region's federal money. Route 62 had something special going for it when it won $3.1 million in funding. The route travels through low-income and minority communities. The added service is one result of the Met Council's promise to chip away at racial and economic disparities in the Twin Cities. I didn't realize that it was the job of transportation to cure racism.
Yeah.
I didn't know the light rail of trains could do that.
Magically.
It's incredible.
You put build some trains and add some bus routes and racial and economic disparities wither away. What about jobs?
There's that.
Yeah.
For some suburban lawmakers, the factors that vaulted 62 over a park and ride in Eden Prairie represent social engineering and the regional government run amok. They warned of it 4 years ago. The same year, the council's then-director declared a new chapter for the agency focused on ending racial disparities under the banner of equity.
And that is not what it was built to do.
It really is.
This is remind people. This is an agency whose existence came into being in order to coordinate sewers, and make sure infrastructure was all connected and working well together, and the cities had sort of a one place organization they go to and make sure all their services get connected the way they're supposed. That's it.
They're
going to end racism.
You had the Star Tribune pushing back, right, every way they possibly could over Representative Jason Lewis and his idea, right, to change the way that people end up being seated on the Met Council, right? So the Star Tribune just put, I don't know how many editorials they ran last week pushing against Representative Jason Lewis. Then they come out today with an article like this. I feel like the Star Tribune is having sort of a look in the mirror moment where like, oh, you know what, we really probably shouldn't have put out, so they're not doing a very good job, and maybe we should put out some truth about what the Met Council's really about. I feel like that's how you get a piece like this. Because it's lengthy, and they point out how they've actually failed to go and do what they were supposed to go and do.
I mean, it's caused a ripple. They've had a ripple. It's rippled a little bit, That's something, right?
The Anoka County Commissioner, Matt Look, said it's not a fair playing field. They're creating special classes and saying because you're a special class, you get favoritism. Equity is now omnipresent on the council's 30-year plans for the region, mentioned in more than 230 times in documents that shape spending on housing, parks, transportation systems, and wastewater treatment.
We need equity in our wastewater.
I've been saying it for years. A Star Tribune review of the equity push found it has produced more suggestions than concrete changes on how the region operates.
Because it's a fake goal that can never really be achieved.
Right.
That's why.
Right.
It's this fear. It's this vague idea. Without a government, policies and Met Council transportation policies, you're never gonna achieve this ridiculous fake notion of equity through all this central planning.
No, it's feel good. And even when you get further into into the article, and it talks about the equity, we'll jump way ahead. You get to the last page of this. To ensure a diverse group of citizens always had its ear, the council created an equity advisory committee in 2015 to, doing that thing with my fingers, engage constituents as full partners in decision making that affects them. 2.5 years later, its remaining members told the council's chair that they signed up to help shape big decisions. Again, this was their equity advisory committee, but were instead deluged by months of presentations about how the council operates. It has 11 vacancies, partly due to terms expiring. It was a one-way process where we got orientated with the Met Council, but the Met Council didn't get anything from our perspective. It's all just for show. I mean, I guess on the one hand, you could argue that maybe we shouldn't push back over the Met Council's push for equity in their transportation planning because they failed at it anyway. So in which case, well, they didn't really accomplish what they set out to accomplish, so it didn't have any tangible impact, except for the fact that it did. Because they did end up making some changes to some projects based off of low-income areas and medium, you know, the housing in certain areas, not based off of where is there a need to put in certain transportation to serve a particular population. Instead, in a few circumstances, they actually put it in places where they felt this is where there was economic disparities, and so we're going to go and put it here to meet these equity goals. But for the most part, they completely failed. The council upgraded many bus shelters in poor neighborhoods, created a discount bus pass for low-income riders. It doled out $1 million in equity grants and helped families with housing vouchers find homes in wealthier neighborhoods. Wait, what? Wait, what?
Huh? That's equity, John.
Wait, what?
That's how equity works.
Why is the Met Council getting people? Why are they in the real estate game?
Because equity.
Internally, it demanded departments improve their public
a home you can't afford
outreach.
Equity.
Educate their employees about racial equity and boost workforce diversity, which rose 5 percentage points since 2011. Some of its most high-profile initiatives, however, faltered. The new Equity Advisory Committee is in disarray, questioning their purpose. The legislature slapped down on the council's attempts to get park agencies to spend more money attracting underserved populations. And despite accounting for equity in the council's distribution of federal transportation dollars, the measure proved pivotal for only 6 projects that won funding out of more than 100 awarded money since 2014. You know, it's like the Met Council shouldn't be doing social engineering. I feel like that shouldn't be part of what they do. By the way, they do mention in the article, the Met Council wields more power than almost any regional governing body in the country. It operates the 7-county metro area's transit and wastewater systems, guides how cities use land, doles out grants and spurs development, and oversees the regional park system. Gee, I wonder why Representative Jason Lewis wants a better way to go and put its members on the board.
Yeah.
I wonder why it should happen.
Because it's got so much power. This board has an unbelievable amount of power and influence, and there is no real tangible way for the people that are subject to its power, for the people that is wielding this power over, to have any degree of accountability or pushback on it. If they disagree with something the Met Council does currently, the best they can hope for is to wait 4 years and maybe they'll get a different governor. That's it. Otherwise, you know, you have nothing else. This serves as the whims of the governor.
Ultimately, the new equity measure, according to the Star Tribune, accounted for about 3% of scoring for road and bridge projects, up 12% for transit projects. The Met Council staff said it cannot say for certain that those projects would have been underfunded without the equity score, because projects are ranked on many other criteria that could have been reprioritized. Maybe we need to make an argument. Maybe we can get the Star Tribune on board with Jason Lewis's plan if we convince them that they can have a better shot at equity. if they were to go and have those individuals elected in a different way. Maybe we can combine our efforts. Because clearly the Star Tribune thinks the Met Council sucks just like we do. they say the average taxpayer, they're going to say, you should be looking at safety, congestion, and is the infrastructure failing, and does it need improvement? That's according to Aranda Sivajara, chair of the Anoka County Board during the meeting last year with the new Met Council chair. I don't think they would say racially concentrated areas of poverty or other criteria within transportation funding. After studying why communities of color use regional parks less frequently, the council imposed new equity requirements on the 10 independent agencies that oversaw the system, yet its most forceful effort was shut down not long after it began. I just, again, it's ridiculous that the Met Council's reach goes as far as it does, and that even with the reach that they have, they put out, we're going to be equitable, we're going to do these projects, and they don't even get that right.
Yeah.
They don't even do that right.
Doesn't matter, though. And same with the raising the smoking age conversation we were having in the last segment. Outcomes are not important. It's intentions, and it's the ability to go out there and say, look what we did.
Right.
Look what we did. We tried. We tried really hard, you know. Our goal is equity. That should be good enough. Ignore the fact that the outcomes don't match our intentions. Ignore the fact that we're not getting any sort of return on the millions of dollars that are being spent, in whatever endeavor it is. That doesn't matter. You shouldn't hold us accountable for outcomes. You should reward us because we have the right intentions.
You know, and that rings true when we're going to get into this coming up here in just a moment, but that rings true when it comes to the presidency of Donald Trump right now, because the outcome
right
of what President Donald Trump is achieving right now doesn't matter.
They don't care.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
he's just, but he's
results. They don't care about results,
but he's Trump.
They care about feelings.
Why can't you know ethics and stuff? Yeah. We've got problems here.
Trump makes me feel icky. Therefore,
right.
I am opposed to everything Trump does because I don't like him very. He's just kind of gross.
Hey, Sam. Somebody really a little while ago, if you use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter, somebody really, really stuck it to me because they because they said, and Drew, I don't know if you saw this or not, and I don't know how I can come back from this. They said that I personally should spend more time praising my wife because of Mother's Day.
That would make for a very fun show.
Then talking nice about Trump and his accomplishments.
That'd be a great radio show.
That's the argument.
You know, Justice and Drew, we're going to praise John's wife.
You should be praising your wife too, Drew. Why is it just me?
I don't know. They only directed it at you.
Always well, that
both
way.
Of your wives are wonderful women that should be celebrated. But people aren't
tuning
in.
Yeah, but not on the
air. Yeah. No, yeah. People aren't tuning in to listen to you talk about your wives, and you're only on air talking about Trump for 3 hours a day. You spend all of your other hours,
But clearly, I love Trump more if I talk about him more on the show than my wife.
Think about it this way.
This three-hour window into your life every day.
Think about it that way. You're spending 3 hours a day talking about Trump, maybe, and then the rest of your day, you're pretty much spending with your wife, talking about your wife, thinking about your wife, or thinking about plans with your wife.
True story. Based off that logic, not only do I love Trump more than my wife, but also Star Wars, obviously, and NASCAR as well. So, because those are all things. Well, I think in Star Wars I talk about more on the air than my wife, but NASCAR I don't bring up all that much. So maybe it's just Star Wars and Trump above my and then my wife and then NASCAR.
I didn't realize that the new strategy for successful radio shows that cover news and politics is to talk about your wife.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
While you're at it, celebrate
stop me
too.
My wife listens. I'll end up saying something stupid and she's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife does not listen. So For those that weren't listening earlier, we did have a nice little. It's a short piece of audio. You can go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and go to the Justice and Drew page, or you can listen to it now. This week, Minnesota DFL gubernatorial candidate Tim Walz said what he truly thinks about the rural Republican Minnesota. Sam, do you have that particular piece of audio?
You see those maps. Red and blue, and there's all that red across there, and Democrats go into depression over it. It's mostly rocks and cows that are in that red area.
Yes, I am now Roxanne Counts.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, come on, DFL. You don't have to pay any attention to anything outside of the Twin Cities metro area because it's nothing but rocks and cows. Those aren't actual people. They're not actual voters. You don't need to care about them.
He said, you see those maps. He told an audience in Minneapolis, red and blue, and there's all that red across there, and the Democrats go into a depression over it. It's mostly rocks and cows that are in that red area. So Sam, did you come into a conclusion, by the way? Are you a rock or are you a cow?
I am both.
Yeah, you are pretty rock solid in your opinions. I will give you that.
I would rather be a cow than a rock. So we'll go with cow.
Does he want to win?
Yeah, that clearly was not intended for public consumption.
He's dumb. He was in front of a live audience.
How can anyone? I don't even care if that's like taken out of context. I feel like that's something that someone will say was just taken out of context. It doesn't matter what context it was in. That is just such an awful thing to say.
It's a dumb thing to say.
It's really dumb.
And the gross truth about it is, I bet the majority and the people in the audience thought it was funny. That's the sad part, is that I think a majority of his supporters would be like, yeah, you know, it is.
Well, and that's because a majority of his supporters don't live in those rural areas.
Right.
And I do live in those rural areas. And there are, I mean, I don't know if this is like news to a lot of Democrats, but newsflash, there's a lot of people in those rural areas that have a lot of problems that they really care about. And they count as votes.
Now, this wasn't the only ridiculous piece of audio that was unleashed over the weekend. Coming up, we will play you audio from this bizarre Tom Steyer group. He's a Next Gen America liberal organization founded by the billionaire Tom Steyer. He put out a video earlier this week for this bizarre Mother's Day ad. You really need to watch it. If you go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page, you can see it there. We'll play you the audio from this coming up. I don't want to get overly optimistic, but it feels like there's a level of desperation coming from the left right now. They don't have a cohesive argument. They don't have an argument to make. Mm-hmm. And so they're leaning on these ridiculous types attacks. We got a new story here about how blue states are trying to rally again. We're back to the Electoral College. They're back to wanting to change that. Right. On top of that, they're looking at net neutrality as an argument for the midterms.
Good luck with that. News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Give us a call. You want to take part in the show? 651-989-5855. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter regarding our last conversation where we are being encouraged by a big fan of the show to spend more time talking about how wonderful our wives are. A friend of the show, Jim, says, let's all just praise Sam Sansevier.
I'm down for that.
Yeah, let's just spend the whole show talking about how great she is.
I'm down for that.
Got it. Yeah, a friend of the show, Bill, ended up emailing in, talking about other stations where wife talk is apparently the thing.
Yeah.
There are outlets for people if they want to.
That's what you're into.
You know, maybe the listener wants John to guest host on other radio stations geared more towards female talk. I haven't tried my hand at female talk. Something tells me I'd be okay.
I feel like you would actually be very good at female talk.
I feel like you kind of do it every day.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me for being in touch with my feelings. I'm just as God made me, sir.
In touch with your feelings, in touch with like the latest fashion trends, in touch with popular music.
That's right. Look at that, man. Some of the nicest things you ever said about me. Bill also says, in regards to Tim Walz and the Rocks and Cows, does Tim Walz not realize that the Rocks and Cows in his district are the people that voted for him? The only reason he's in office is because of those quote-unquote rocks and cows. I live in his district, and I feel like I am neither a rock nor a cow.
I hope that's in every ad, because Walz is likely to be the DFL nominee at this point. It certainly looks that way. Whoever the GOP nominee ends up being, after the endorsements and primaries are all done, I hope they put that in every ad that runs in greater Minnesota.
Out of IJR.com, Jimmy Kimmel has been on the front lines for the attacks on President Donald Trump, but now it appears he's changing things up. At least during his upcoming comedy routine for ABC. In an interview with Deadline, Kimmel was asked if he had been saving up a barrel full of barbs for the president and his ongoing big show. Okay, so I guess he's doing a comedy bit for ABC.
Okay.
He responded.
He's going back to comedy?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, that'll be a nice change. Yeah. Like retro Kimmel.
He said, oh, wow, yeah, you know, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess you're right. Hopefully it'll be the last up front of the Trump era, too. So I don't know. I don't know how much focus there will be on that. I think people have had a blank full of Donald Trump, and I feel like the up front is a time to look within and make fun of ourselves. When asked whether it would be totally Trump-free, Kimmel said that he can't imagine that it would be entirely Trump-free, but he's not planning on Trump being the focus of his jokes. I'm already seeing a lot of other things to point out and make fun of. We're getting all sorts of new terminology that doesn't seem to last one year to the next.
I hope that some fatigue is starting to set in amongst the general populace. I mean, I know for me personally, and I think I speak for you, John, that we grew weary of the constant just barrage of Trump, Trump, Trump on, normally where we would look for entertainment outlets.
Right.
I've grown tired of it. It fatigues me to the point sometimes where I almost find myself like, God, I can't wait for the Trump era to be over.
Right.
Just to move on. I don't really feel that way, but at the same time, it's exhausting. I hope that's starting to set in. We saw a bit on Saturday Night Live, the same thing where you had a bunch of the mothers come out of the cast members for Mother's Day and say, you guys are doing too much Trump.
Yeah. Well, and look, in all honesty, even during the Obama years, you didn't get it, obviously, from the mainstream media. You didn't get it from your late night talk shows. You didn't get it from, from SNL. But in conservative circles, the anti-Obama stuff got old and tiresome. Mm-hmm. I mean, the memes were played out after, even after the first 4 years. And we talked about it a bunch, stop with the birther issue. Stop. And that was true. He's like, you're not getting anywhere. Even if you believe that wasn't necessarily one who got on board with any of that nonsense. But even if there were some legitimacy to that, we were all right in saying that's never going to get anywhere during this presidency. It got old and tiresome then. And especially when it comes to, we keep saying this over and over again, especially when it comes to President Donald Trump, is that you actually do have legitimate things that you could point to. You could actually go and criticize and moves that he's making beyond the foreign policy wins that we are, that we're seeing today. I mean, the president right now released a video talking about the moving of the embassy, the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem this morning. You want to talk about, you can argue stuff about trade once he wants to do with China, but yeah. Instead they continue to focus on all that ancillary nonsense.
The gossip.
Yeah, like you said, the John McCain, comment
right.
stuff.
Right, right. Despite talking about the legitimate historical developments that are taking place with North Korea, and the pitfalls that may come with those. I mean, it's not all roses and unicorns. There's some concerns that are we putting too much trust in this tyrannical dictator Kim Jong-un in this instance. Talk about our relationship with China. Talk about the genuine possible negative ramifications of pulling out of the Iran deal. There's policy things that we could be focusing on, but instead we all get so wrapped up in the salacious gossip.
Well, and the truth is, it's not just Trump either, right? It's also the way that the left continues to portray just the GOP in general. And again, this is out of IJR.com, and it's been posted everywhere. You can watch the video on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page. But for Mother's Day 2018, an anti-Trump group backed by billionaire Tom Steyer released an ad in which a mother discusses the warning signs that her son got involved with the Republican Party.
Oh, no.
With the center, and we'll play you the audio here, but you need kind of the background because there's a lot of quiet moments where they're showing video and stuff. With sentimental music playing in the background, the mother recounted how her son engaged in behavior like stealing from people less fortunate than him in middle school, holding a baby killer sign and hanging out with white supremacists. The video also took a dig at President Donald Trump as the mother explained that her son frequently came home from college because he never learned how to do his own laundry. The video then showed images of her son with a red shirt bearing Trump's name. It wasn't until I met his college buddies that I realized it was too late. The mother said before the viewer saw an image of the tiki torch wielding white nationalists who protested in Charlottesville, Virginia last year. Now, again, this was Next Gen America that put this video up, a liberal organization founded and led by the billionaire Tom Steyer, who put out the video earlier this week, poured millions of dollars into electoral races, Steyer did, fundraised for the former Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton, called for Trump's impeachment. Now, Trump appeared to respond to the video over the weekend, tweeting, "Wacky and totally unhinged Tom Steyer, who has been fighting me and my Make America Great Again agenda from the beginning, never wins elections." So, do we dare here play the audio?
I started noticing some issues with him, maybe in middle school. The stealing started out small, a few dollars here and there. Not from me, oddly enough, but from less fortunate kids.
God.
He was never afraid to talk with girls. But things never really worked out for some reason. I worried when he went to college. But he came home often. I guess he never really learned to do his own laundry. It wasn't until I met his college buddies that I realized it might be too late. Only a mother can catch the signs early. This Mother's Day, talk to your child about the GOP. I wish I had.
Wow.
Yeah,
vote Democrat.
They've lost their minds.
I just,
and it shows you, like, they cannot engage with conservatives.
Right.
They can't. They cannot engage with conservatives in an actual discussion, debate, conversation about our differences and worldviews, ideas, policies, etc. All they've got left is pure demonization, making them out to be the worst people in the world, stealing from the poor, you know, horrible racists and Klan members. They have completely abandoned the idea of, hey, let's talk about our differences on the issues.
Right. We put up the Center of the American Experiment. Finally put out, they posted the video, the 53 minutes of Candace Owens from the forum that took place in downtown Minneapolis last week. That video is available up on the Twin Cities News Talk page and the Justice and Drew page. When you get a chance today, watch that. Because it's relevant to what we were just playing. Because it speaks to exactly, Drew, what you were... Because we were there, what you were talking about. What Candace Owens went through as she was ostracized for coming out, not even just as conservative, but having a different viewpoint. And how she's been criticized and demonized. And even when we talked about it last week, suddenly you were racist for supporting Candace Owens.
Yes, I got called a racist because I pointed out how much I appreciate her and like her
right. And
agree with her.
Right. You're a racist for doing that.
I'm racist for doing that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Everyone needs to watch that video. No, I don't get it. Well, they don't have any arguments on their side.
If agreeing with Candace Owens makes me racist, then I guess so what? Go have at it. I don't understand it. I'm completely lost on that subject now.
Coming up, out of Reuters, blue states are rallying to upend the Electoral College. Apparently, we're right back to that again. It's just the beginning of last year, for crying out loud. Plus, out of the Hill, Dems increasingly see electoral dynamite in net neutrality fight.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we'll get to all that coming up.
Justice.
Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Final segment of your Monday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Tomorrow on the show, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, as we wind down the legislative session, and from Fox News, scofflaw Pete Hegseth.
That's right. Seatbelts are tyranny.
He'll join us tomorrow.
I'm paraphrasing
at this time, in the, just in this segment tomorrow, as he does on every Tuesday.
Out of Reuters, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. That's how they're labeling it now, which blue states are joining to commit to allocating their electoral votes to the national popular vote winner, regardless of their own state results.
Cool. I wonder how the states feel about that.
It doesn't matter. We know this to be true. The pact is meant to be a workaround the constitutional requirements that created the Electoral College system, which awards the state's electors to the winner of that state. So we want to, again, have all the presidents decided by the really, you know, populated coastal areas. Fantastic. We'll just ignore that whole middle part of the country.
I'm not a strong proponent or opponent of the Electoral College or the push towards, you know, going to a more national popular vote. I just have yet to hear one convincing argument for national popular vote. You know, every time people bring it up, I say, well, cool. I mean, as long as you're okay with the presidency being decided basically by, you know, four or five metro areas around the country.
I'm not personally.
But, you know, no. If that's what you're pushing for, understand that's going to be the result, and presidential candidates will never have any reason to come to, I don't know, Minnesota. Or Wisconsin, or Iowa, or, you know, most of the country will be ignored when it comes to presidential issues, and it'll be decided based on the whims and the, you know, whatever the issue du jour is that is impacting New York, LA, Chicago, Dallas, DC, Seattle, Houston. You know, your top seven or eight large metro areas would be enough to basically determine the presidency.
I
convince me otherwise, and maybe I'll get on board.
In theory, the game-changing compact would take effect once it signs on states representing at least 270 electoral votes, the threshold to win the presidency, with the expected addition of Connecticut's seven electoral votes. The group now says they have 172. I personally like the rocks and the cows to be able to have a say in the matter. That's just me, though. I think the rocks and cows opinion is very important. Democrat Governor Daniel Malloy is expected to sign legislation into law following the Senate approving legislation opting Connecticut into the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. The National Popular Vote Compact will ensure an equal vote for every American citizen, regardless of which state they happen to live in. So you've got California, Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, all joining in. Critics say the pact would actually hurt smaller states like Connecticut, given that candidates would likely, as Drew said, only focus on large population centers and neglect the rural areas. Again, the rocks and the cows.
You're right.
From a constitutional perspective, the proposal, shockingly, or not so shockingly, could also run into obvious legal challenges. Not only did the framers of the Constitution expressly reject the idea of a direct popular election for the president, but also not one state either in the wake of ratification or any time thereafter has ever sought to appoint its presidential electors on the basis of votes cast outside that state, right, as the National Popular Vote Compact requires, according to a law professor.
Right. If you can convince me that the less populated states will get some degree of representation and say in our presidential elections, you want to talk about electoral college reform? Fine. Let's have that conversation. But just abandoning it altogether in favor of a national popular vote, I think, is a terrible idea.
In the meantime, out of the Hill, Democrats are increasing looking to make their support for net neutrality regulations a campaign issue for midterm elections. Okay. Good luck with that. I'm sorry, but most don't even really understand what the issue really is. So I feel like just by making it an issue is not going to ensure that you're going to go and win elections that way. Actually, I take it back. I kind of want to see Democrats make net neutrality an issue, just because maybe people will actually get more informed as to what net neutrality really is and does.
If they want to make a kind of, I don't know if obscure is the best word, because it has gotten a lot of attention, but a very nuanced issue that a lot of people don't understand, and where their main argument is going to be, give us more control over the internet.
Right.
They want to make that a centerpiece of their campaigns. I say thumbs up, man.
Yeah.
Go for it.
We'll get to more on this in just a moment. We do have some people calling in, want to comment on the Electoral College.
Craig, calling from Circle Pines. Good morning, Craig. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. The people don't understand that the president is elected by the states, not by the people. He presides, or she presides, over the union, not you and me individually.
Right.
We're a federation of sovereign states, and that's the 17th Amendment took us down a bad road when they started making senators elected popularly.
Yes.
They're supposed to be elected by the state legislatures,
right,
not by the people. Congress.
No, you are absolutely right. And you're right. Most people don't understand that. They don't get that. They don't view, most people don't view, you know, states in the idea that they are, that they were originally established as, you know, as sort of independent governments, that we are all, quote, united, you know, and we have a federal government that can do a handful of things, a very small amount of things, whose powers are not bestowed upon the states. Most people don't look at it that way anymore. The president is the end-all, be-all. He's our king. He's our leader. He's in charge of everything. And it's a really, it's an uneducated view of how our system of government is going to work. And I pin that on the public education system. They fail to teach kids how our government is established and how it's supposed to work.
Absolutely. The chief executive is actually a fairly minor role.
It's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be leader of the free world.
It's supposed to be. It hasn't become that in the last 20, 30 years, but you're right. That's how it's supposed to be. The president should have, whoever the president is, should have a minimal impact on your life.
Right.
If any.
Right.
Let's go to John in Florida. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I was going to mention the 17th Amendment, but one of the things people have to remember is that is precisely what they want to do, is have the president elected basically by California and New York. And that's what would happen. You'd never see a presidential candidate in Montana or even in Minnesota for that matter. And that is what they want. But most of the people who kind of go along with it don't really think about that. In fact, even these, if you ever wondered, like, how can things be going so well and the so-called generic ballot, the Democrats always show plus 6, plus 10, plus 15, no matter how good things are going. That's because that generic ballot includes California and New York. If you took them out of the generic ballot, right now Republicans probably have a 10-point lead.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you for the call, John. Greatly appreciate it. Getting back to net neutrality, it's not clear that Democrats will be able to win the 51st supporter they need to ensure passage. But even if they think, because they're going to be voting on it again this week, the Senate is expected to take up the vote in a measure to restore the Obama-era rules. Right, it's not clear if they'll be able to get the 51st supporter, but even if they fail, they think the public fight will crystallize their image as the party battling to support the open internet. And they see it as creating public record of Republicans voting against net neutrality, which they plan to use for future campaigns. Senator Brian Schatz of a Hawaii Democrat said this bill does one simple thing. It gets every member of the Senate on record for or against net neutrality. Republicans are going to regret it from a public policy standpoint and a political standpoint. But this has always been, the net neutrality thing, at least in my opinion, has always been more of a hashtag movement. It looks really, really big because those that have been pushing because they're so concerned about it being repealed did a really, really good job of pushing it out on social media. They did a good job of putting it on Twitter and putting it on Facebook and having it be promoted thing on Reddit.
And they promoted it via the companies that they are claiming are looking to throttle traffic and stifle free speech and stifle their ability. If that were the case, why wouldn't they have just put in some keywords and said, anybody that posts about net neutrality, we're just going to delete those posts.
Yeah,
it's gonna make it really hard for you to get those. You know, it's a solution for a problem that is completely imagined, that might happen, could possibly happen, but hasn't actually happened.
Democratic campaign committees say they plan to use the issue to rally support for their candidates in the 2018 midterms and potentially future elections as well. Well, you know, again, I'd almost let the Senate Republicans and support them going ahead and putting the Obama era rules back in place again if this is the only argument the Democrats have left. Just succumb to it. Okay, yeah. Fine, sure. Sure. All right, we'll put the Obama-era rules back in place. Okay, what do we argue now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now what do we do?
The internet was doing just fine.
Right.
Before those rules went in place. In fact, it was expanding and innovating. And when you start to regulate it, all you do is stifle that.
Well, and that's the problem with pushing this if they were to use this and try to make a big campaign issue about it. For I think the majority of people that don't understand it, a lot of them are going to be like, how does it affect me? Is my internet going anywhere? Mm-hmm. I haven't noticed any price change. I don't get it. I don't really care. Everything's been fine for me. Nothing. Oh, it's been repealed already?
Right.
I didn't notice any changes? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I don't. Well, then it's just going to turn into it's going to end up becoming just a left versus right issue, in which case you're just back down to party politics like you normally are.
They did an amazing job with net neutrality, you know, whipping people up into a frenzy over something that never had happened, over just the possibility that a company might do these things. It shows you how quick people are to embrace more government as a solution to every problem, even problems that don't exist yet, of how quickly, you know, they were able to galvanize so many people that something might happen, so we better get government in now.
Yep.
And put all these regulations on all these companies now just to make sure that this thing that we just made up and imagined doesn't actually happen at some point.
Last week, the Associated Press, and there's actually a follow-up about this in the Star Tribune today, but Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee released more than 3,500 Facebook ads that were created or promoted by a Russian internet agency, providing the fullest picture yet of Russia's attempt to sow racial and political division in the United States before and after the 2016 election. Most of the ads are issue-based, pushing for arguments for and against immigration, LGBT issues, gun rights, among other issues. A large number of them attempt to stoke the racial divisions. They mention the police brutality, disparaging of the Black Lives Matter movement. Some promoted President Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, who ran against Hillary Clinton in the Democratic presidential primary. Few, if any, supported Clinton. Now, the release of the ads from early 2015 to mid-2017 does not include some of the 80,000 posts that the agency also shared. An Associated Press review of the thousands of ads and their data shows how precisely and sometimes randomly the agency targeted them. The follow-up on this was thousands of the newly disclosed fake Facebook posts and ads showed for the first time how Russia's campaign to influence 2016 election actually directly targeted us here in Minnesota with divisive, racially charged messages. Among the scores of those incendiary ads released last week by that House Intelligence Committee, dozens referenced Minnesota events, including the police shootings of Jamar Clark, Philando Castile. Dozens more mentioned controversies elsewhere and were funneled to Facebook users in Minnesota. Drew, for me, the big takeaway on this is, you know, stop taking what you see on Facebook and Twitter seriously.
Yeah, unless it comes from us.
Well, unless it comes from us. Well, you and me, at least. I mean, right. You've got to be careful with Sam. But
Sam perpetuates a lot of fake news.
True story, you know.
But I don't know what you're talking about.
She'll retweet anything.
That's not true.
Don't use social media as a means to validate your views and opinions.
And if you see something on social media that does seem to validate those views and opinions and biases and beliefs, consume it skeptically.
Right.
You know, consume everything on social media with a healthy degree of skepticism, because so many people just see a headline and they don't look at where the headline is coming from. They don't actually click on it to go to the website that it's coming from. And there is so much BS out there, so much nonsense, so much fake stuff, you know, parody sites that get spread around as if they're real news, actual sites that are creating fake news stories that are designed to look legitimate. And these things get shared around social media like you know, like wildfire sometimes, and nobody is critical about it. Nobody, not nobody, but most people aren't critical enough, and most people aren't skeptical enough. So when you see something going around social media, like, I don't know, you know, bald men is baldness is a sign of greater virility and success. Just because that confirms what I want to believe doesn't necessarily make it true.
I was not surprisingly, I was watching the documentary Director in the Jedi, was on The Last Jedi. Right at the beginning of the documentary, there's a moment where Rian Johnson, the director, is sitting around the table and they're discussing plot lines and the story. He's got his phone and he looks at the guy next to him. He's like, yeah, ever since it was announced that I was directing episode eight, I've been getting hundreds of tweets from Russian accounts telling me not to kill General Hux. So, like, in the movie, he talks about when he was announced as the director of the next Star Wars movie, he started getting inundated by supposed Russian accounts telling him to make sure you don't kill General Hux. And he was showing him in the documentary. He's like, yeah, looking
at that character.
Yeah, well, I could say probably the most totalitarian of all of them, you know?
So bizarre.
Yeah, it was just they don't care. They just want to, you know, how much of the fandom? How much of the backlash over Infinity War,
right?
You know, no spoilers. You know, was based off of, you know, I know how we'll get him this time. We'll put out, you know, we'll sow discord within the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well,
I know
we're joking.
I know. No, I'm serious.
It actually happens.
Yeah, it happens more often than you end up thinking.
They look for any crack. And they don't care what that crack's about. They look for any crack. And if they can widen it, they will.
It's pretty amazing seeing the opening of this embassy in Israel this morning. We were kind of keeping an eye on it in the background. A lot of protests taking place on the Gaza, on the border and by the Gaza Strip. And it looks like they're moving forward with it. Pretty amazing. Trump keeping his promises.
We will talk with Pete Hegseth tomorrow in this segment from Fox News. I'm sure this will be one of the issues that we touch on with Pete Hegseth. Also, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka on tomorrow's show. Have a wonderful day, everybody.
Bye.
Good job, guys.
Good job, Sam.
Do you hear me?
Good job, Drew.
Give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. I don't give me integration.
You know, you see those maps, red and blue, and there's all that red across there, and Democrats go into depression over it. It's mostly rocks and cows that are in that red area.
I'm Chris Addison here.